Welcome back to Sit, Stay, and Listen. I'm one of your hosts, Sully, here with your other host, Zoe, and we are excited today to talk about troubleshooting with dog behavior. But before we get into the main part of the episode, we wanted to go ahead and tell you about our featured pet.
So this dog is an SPCA in Ohio. Her name is Artica. She is a Doggo Argentino. And they're kind of a rare breed, but they're like a Great Dane and a Pit Bull kind of mixed together. But they are very, very sweet. They just have a very bad rep. Their stigma is worse than the stigma that revolves around Pit Bulls. And so they tend to, even when adopted from a breeder, get abandoned and end up in shelters. But everything you read about Artica, and every time I have met a Doggo Argentino, they are so sweet and loving dogs. And Artica can't be in a house with cats due to her prey drive, but that doesn't mean that she's aggressive or poorly behaved. It just means her breed is one with a high prey drive and therefore struggles to live in a house with cats. She is looking for an experienced owner only because she is big. She's an extra large dog, and with that much strength, it is important that the owner knows what they're doing, because it can be hard to control them otherwise. But if you're able to adopt and looking for a dog like her who might not get a home otherwise and are a little bit more experienced, she is a great option for you.
Today we're going to talk about some unwanted behaviors and some that you see in dogs a lot that may not actually be just your dog misbehaving. So things that are common to see in dogs that have some underlying issue. So speaking about unwanted behaviors, what are some of the most common?
The most common unwanted behavior really is barking. In most every situation, you will hear the most complaints about a dog barking excessively or barking when playing or when you leave them alone or things like that. But chewing on things, jumping up when either on a leash or when they're greeting people or you, pulling on the leash, being really mouthy. So if they're chewing on you or clothes or objects that they shouldn't be, those are really the biggest ones. But it can also even be aggression towards other dogs, so reactivity or resource guarding, and then also behaviors such as like peeing inside or...
You mentioned some of the common behaviors. What do they actually tell us about our dogs? You know, every time that I see my dog pick up my sock and try and chew on it, I take it away, I tell her no, and she seems to understand, but then she still does it. Do I just have a bad dog or a stubborn dog that doesn't want to listen?
In very rare cases, yes. Most of the time, no. There is almost always an underlying issue or matter, and that's your dog's way of communicating. Our dogs can't talk to us, but they are very, very good at reading our body language and reading how we communicate, and therefore adapting and reacting to how we are. So because of that, they will see what we're doing and address it in a way that they know. So for example, barking. If they are either understimulated or anxious or stressed out, and there is someone coming to the door, and this causes them to either get overexcited if they're understimulated, stresses them out because they're not good in situations that they're not familiar with, or whatever it may be, they're going to portray that anxiety or that emotion by barking. So they are communicating most of the time to the owner, to their person, and saying, I'm not comfortable, or whatever. They're expressing their emotions. This isn't always the case, but 9 times out of 10, the behavior is not what you're addressing. You're addressing the underlying matter. This is slightly different when it's like chewing or being really mouthy. Sometimes it's just the breed. Like a herding breed is going to nip at your heels more as puppies because that's what they were bred to do. Chewing a lot of times is under stimulation. A bored dog is a destructive dog. A happy dog, a lot of people say, is a tired dog, which isn't necessarily true, but a stimulated dog is a happy dog. So if they are understimulated, if they aren't getting the exercise or attention that they need, they're going to chew things, they're going to become destructive. And that's, again, addressing the chewing behavior isn't going to affect how that dog reacts. It might stop chewing, but then it's going to find another unwanted behavior to react with. If you address why it's chewing, that's going to help the overall behavior and your dog's well-being.
Chewing is not necessarily related to your dog's behavior. And if you express that you don't like it and they understand that and they get it, they'll just kind of transition to some other behavior if they're still experiencing that thing they don't like. So what are some of those? You mentioned a couple, but what are some big key points about those underlying issues? What could they be?
The biggest one is anxiety. Most dogs aren't as calm as we portray them to be. They experience emotions just like us, and they aren't able to advocate for themselves as well as people are. So that's going to come out in ways such as barking, even snapping at people, being reactive on the leash, things like that. But understimulation is a huge one as well, especially if you have a breed that's a working breed and it doesn't have a job. It doesn't necessarily need to have a full-time job depending on what breed it is, but it does need to have something to do. And if it's not provided with that, it can cause some of these behaviors. And the last one is health issues. Anytime you have a dog that's struggling with aggression or reactivity, I always recommend the first thing you do is take it to your vet. The dog might be in pain. It might be suffering something that you're not able to assess. And if this is an underlying health issue, addressing that health issue may change your dog's behavior entirely, but also is going to keep your dog healthy and is the ethical thing to do. So it's generally not a health issue, but it is always important to check on that first and just ask a vet if there's anything that you don't notice, because again, that is your dog's way of telling you what's going on, what they're feeling, and it's our job to interpret what they're telling us.
One important note that I would make within that is your dog is going to act differently at the vet than it acts pretty much anywhere else, because it's a very different situation than pretty much anywhere else it goes. So you're also going to have to let your vet know if something like that is going on, that that's what you're wanting to ask about as well. When I first got Svedka, I didn't realize she had so much separation anxiety. It makes sense that she does, but I didn't realize that she did. So I couldn't figure out some of these behaviors and some of the health issues that she was experiencing because of that anxiety. But when I took her to the vet and I asked about, you know, why is she throwing up all the time, my vet was immediately like, oh, I didn't know she was doing that. It's clearly this thing. Sometimes it's just a matter of calling your vet or taking them in for a really quick visit, but actually telling them what's going on, not just saying, hey, can you do a physical exam? She seems off.
Right.
Can you speak a little bit more specifically about anxiety? You said it's one of the biggest issues in dogs, and obviously people experience anxiety too. And like you said, dogs can't advocate for themselves the same way that people can. So what are some ways that dogs try to advocate for themselves, and what forms does anxiety take in dogs?
Anxiety in dogs is very similar to anxiety in people. They just can't feel sorry for themselves, or they don't feel sorry for themselves. So it comes out in different ways, but it affects them very similarly. If a dog went through something traumatic or might just be born differently, and there's something in their brain that isn't the same as most dogs, and they develop or are born with anxiety, this means that they will be triggered by things. And it's important to notice what those stimuli are for the certain dogs. For example, it might be walking on a leash and another dog approaches. It might be certain sounds, loud sounds, specific tones of voice, whatever it may be. There are triggers, just like there are triggers for people with anxiety. And it also can build. If you're in an anxious situation and then more things happen that might not usually be a trigger, that is still building upon your anxiety. Even if it was just that one instance, your dog wouldn't be bothered by it. Just like how people, if you're already anxious, more things are going to set you off. So it's very relatable to the anxiety that people feel. They just aren't able to say, I'm not going to this place, or I'm not going to do this because I know I'm going to be anxious about it. They just react once they get in that situation because they're not able to advocate for themselves, like we said. So that reaction could be, again, reactivity, lunging, barking, jumping at dogs, people cats, whatever it may be, cars sometimes. It can also be overexcitement. Sometimes it looks like a dog is very excited and like runs up, greets people really crazily, but that's actually a sign of anxiety most of the time and should be addressed as if they were reactive. Those are really the big ones. That's mostly how anxiety shows up in dogs and how they advocate for themselves in the best way they can. But it can lead to biting people, lunging, snapping, attacking other dogs if it's not addressed when noticed. And that's when dogs get labeled as aggressive, even if it's really just an underlying anxiety issue that was never addressed.
So if they have these kind of anxiety issues, what would you recommend to start to address it?
The very first thing you need to do, unless you have experience working with anxious dogs, is find someone who does. Because you are not going to be able to take it on by yourself. And I know that because I've worked with anxious dogs and it was much harder than I ever thought it would be. And that doesn't mean you're not great with your dog, but you have a connection with your dog that a trainer is not going to have. So every time they react, a part of you is breaking too. You are hurt by it, not because you're scared that they're doing something wrong, but you know what they're going through, and it just hurts you so much to see that. And on top of that, it doesn't just go away. Anxiety builds over time and it develops into what it becomes. And because of that, it's not just something that, oh, I do this one thing differently and it's automatically better. Dog training is never linear. It goes in loops and circles, and you take 3 steps forward and then 5 steps back. But then the next day you're back to where you were, and it's all over the place. And that's just too much for one person who doesn't have experience to be working with. But if you are willing to put in time and put in effort, you really want to first address what the triggers are. So see what they are first by examining every time my dog reacts, what's going on around it. Is there a dog approaching? Is there a certain sound? Even if it seems to be nothing, there is something going on that's triggering that dog. Find what its triggers are, assess how it behaves when it is triggered, and then find something that is more appealing to it than what is going on. If your dog is overly protective of you, for example, and they're scared that when a dog goes by, they're going to get attacked or you're going to get attacked. So they react first and they say, back up, and they bark at this other dog. First, you need to figure out the distance that's best for your dog that it won't react within. But also, if there's a toy or a treat that they prefer more, let them see the dog, let them see whatever the trigger is, and then engage with them. Show them that you're still there, you're okay, you're going to take initiative, they don't need to, and reward them, because it's showing them that they're allowed to have that emotion, but it's not okay to react in the way that they're going to. And you will provide for them in ways that they might not notice if you're willing to be that. Not like a dominant leader or an alpha or anything like that. Dominance is not a true training technique, and it's been debunked. But an anxious dog usually is anxious because they don't know what to do. And if you tell them, I've got this, this is what you need to do, you're okay, then they will realize, oh, I'm okay. I know what to do. I don't have to be anxious in this situation. Or I'm anxious, but that's okay because it's being handled.
One thing that I noticed about Svedka since bringing her home that's kind of changed was like the first couple days, the first couple weeks after I brought her home, she wasn't quite so anxious when I wasn't around. She kind of did her own thing, was more independent. And when we went on walks, she kind of didn't really care what other people or other dogs were doing. But now, every time that she sees another dog or another person on our walk, it's all eyes on that person or dog. And it's like staring them down till they're out of our field of view. And if they come close, she's not reactive to where she's like aggressive, like, you know, barking or growling or anything like that. but she does get that overexcited. Like, she'll jump around and pull, and, like, sometimes she'll even jump into me or try to jump into the other dog. And, of course, I hold her on, like, a close leash, so she can't. A lot of dogs, because she's big, get scared of that. So I don't let her, you know, engage in that type of behavior with them. But what I have always interpreted that change as is, when I got her, she wasn't really bonded to me. She didn't really care. You know, I was just a person that was there. I was the one holding the leash. But would you say that it's affected by who's walking them or their connection to somebody? Would Millie be more worried about you than she would be about some stranger?
Every dog trainer who specializes in reactive dogs that I have spoken with will tell you, or has told me, most reputable ones, I am assuming, I don't know for certain, but will tell you this. If they take the leash and walk that dog, within minutes, they're not going to be nearly as reactive. They're going to be much calmer. They might still be anxious, but they're not going to be barking, lunging. And that's not because they're expert dog trainers. They do know a lot about dogs, and that does help a lot. But if you take the owner, someone they're not bonded with, and throw them out the room, take them out this whole equation, and put this dog in a situation where they have someone who's saying, I know you're anxious, but this is what we're going to do, and isn't emotionally bonded with them either, so they're not hesitating or being sympathetic towards certain mannerisms that the dog may portray, it's going to be so much easier to address that issue. But that doesn't mean that the issue is gone when you put them back in the owner's hand, which is why most of those trainers that I have spoken to about this will say, I do not take the leash when I'm working with another dog, because I can do that. I know I can train them not to do that. And I know if I'm walking them, they won't be reactive after this much training. But the owner's the one who's going to have to live with them. The owner's the one who's going to walk them every day. The owner's the one who's asking for my help. It's not me. So it does help a lot having a dog that's not as bonded with you. They aren't going to show all of those reactive traits sometimes. And just because they aren't as bonded, and so they don't feel a need to be as protective.
So I know that some people also train their dogs for protection. If you get a dog and they pull on the leash and get, you know, display those protective behaviors, is that the same thing as a protection dog?
So the nature of the dogs that portray those protective traits without any training is the same nature that's honed in protection dogs. But if a dog has those protective tendencies to the point of reactivity, any reputable trainer won't train them for protection because it is unsafe. Now, they use those natural talents within a dog to have that drive. If a dog has those natural protective tendencies, a trainer will use that to their advantage, but they are going to make sure that they teach the dog that it is, you protect when threatened, and what it truly means to be threatened, not you feel threatened. It's, this is what it means to be threatened, and this is when you portray those protective behaviors. So the dogs that have protective tendencies that lead to reactivity have that same drive that protection dogs tend to, but those are not the dogs that are trained as protection dogs, because that can be very dangerous. And maybe if you had gotten that dog as a puppy, or you got that dog before it was reactive, it might have been perfect for that. But once it has those reactive tendencies, it is very dangerous, and we don't choose to train those dogs to be protection dogs because of the risks that it may hold.
I hear a lot of people saying, like, I have a dog for protection. And sometimes I know the person has either trained the dog themselves or hired someone to do the training. Other times, the protection dogs are sort of just a dog that someone has that they feel like they're very close with. And so they'll call it, you know, like, oh, my dog would protect me. if I needed it. And I wanted to make sure with you that there was a difference between those reactive and protective behaviors, since one of them is like very much training versus instinctual reaction to something.
Yeah, no, there's a huge difference. And I haven't worked with many protection dogs. I would like to work with more, but I have worked with a few. And all the ones that I have worked with are kind of like Millie in a sense. They are like how Millie is always technically on duty. But when she's off duty, she's playing. And like, if she needs to alert, she will stop and she will. But she's being a dog. Echo was one of the dogs that I worked with. He was the most well-trained protection dog I've ever met or just heard of, seen. And he was so sweet. He wasn't a super cuddly dog, but that was just because it wasn't who he was. But he would play with you. He would love playing ball, fetch, all that stuff. Great on the leash. But the second you used any of his commands and you asked him, he has German commands, but if you asked him to watch in German, that meant, okay, I need to be watching whatever it is. So if it's a person, if it's a car, if it's whatever it is, he needs to be watching that. And so if you used his commands, the second that happened, he would lock in and he would focus. And it wasn't like I'm being aggressive or I'm being reactive and I'm scared and this is what I need to do. I'm focusing. I'm going to attack you. It's you told me to watch out for this and that's my job. So I'm watching that. I'm not going to do anything. You can come up and talk to my mom or my dad. You can go up and hug them. You can go up and do all this stuff. But if you hit them, if you're aggressive towards them, whatever it is, I'm jumping in because that's what I was trained to do. So again, that is that drive that is trained into those breeds, but it's not what we see as reactivity.
And I think also another thing that I've learned about protection dogs, as you've told me about working with them, is it's very calculated, trained, and planned whenever they do anything. Like you said, when he's supposed to be watching, he has to have that command to watch. He's not just constantly like staring at his owner or handler or whoever it is that he's protecting. He's not just waiting for something to happen or someone to get close. I think movies and TV shows often portray it as like some guy with two huge dogs and they got the spike collars and they stand around him and nobody comes within a 10-foot radius of him without them like growling and barking and pulling on their leash if they have one. But it's not that idea. There's a command for watching. There's a command for even doing anything about it. I know that he also is trained for like if somebody hits her, he would interfere. But also know there's some protection dogs that have a command for like attacking someone who is a problem and they bite until they're told to let go.
Every protection dog that I've worked with, and again, every reputable trainer that I have spoken to or heard of, the first thing you train is your let go command. That's the very first thing you train. And they are not allowed to just attack unless they're given a command. That is the very last step of training, is teaching them when it's a threat, because you do not want to mix that up. Every dog has a command when to bite or when to attack, and every dog has a command when to let go, because that is essential to protection training. It's very accurate that when they're told they're working, and that's kind of how it is. There are times when they are just supposed to react to a situation, and not in a reactivity kind of way, but this happens and I was trained to protect my owner in this situation, so I'm going to do that. And they might not necessarily be on duty or have been told to do whatever, but they do still react in a protection dog kind of way. But that doesn't mean that that's just because that dog has those natures. That's because it was trained that in this situation, this is what you do. And it's drilled and it's done a million times until it's solid. And there are missed bites. Every protection dog has missed bites. I've never heard of a dog who hasn't. But because they have those skills to let go the second you ask or to fall back or whatever it is, it's not like they bite you and you break your hand or you have to go to the ER. They mess up, okay, they let go, and then it doesn't happen again. Or it happens maybe twice throughout their whole career. So it's very rare, but it does happen.
Right, and I would imagine that even in those circumstances, if it does happen, it's the same as any other time that a dog misreads a situation, because they're coming from the perspective of a dog. So, like, they see somebody who is actually going in for a hug or a high five, but they think it's, like, an attack. And so
yeah.
That's the kind of thing that happens. It's not just they don't like somebody, it's somebody new, or it's a new dog or whatever, so they have right. that reaction to it.
It's never a reaction that sort of way. So I was actually bit by a protection dog by a misbite once, and
it was. And you were fine.
I was fine.
And you were fine. It was a little tiny bite.
Barely anything, but it was kind of my fault, but it was also just a poor situation all around. I was at my work and I came around and I knew that one of my coworkers had a protection dog, but I didn't realize he was in the yard. So I didn't tell anyone I was coming through the back gate, and you can't see through the back gate. So to the dog, someone was breaking in and sneaking up on everyone. And so he came up and he bit my leg. The owner wasn't actually in the yard, but one of my other coworkers was, and the second that she saw it, she called him back. And he listened, and he sat down. Literally right after that, we were playing fetch. I was petting him. He was the sweetest. I mean, I love him so much. But he's so sweet. And, like, it wasn't a, oh, you're new and scary and I hate you. It was just I was doing what I was trying to do. In this situation, you looked like you were breaking in and going to hurt my people. And I was trained to protect those people.
What would you recommend for a dog that is showing some understimulation behavior? So chewing or barking a lot. One thing that Svedka does when she's bored and I want to take a nap is the second that I fall asleep, she can tell. I guess somehow she knows. My breathing changes and she knows. So the second I fall asleep, she gets right up in my face and barks really loud. And it wakes me up every time because she's bored. She's understimulated. She wants something to do. How do you identify that bored dog versus, you know, chewing can be anxiety, it can be boredom, it can be that they're teething, it can be a ton of things. How do you identify a bored dog, an understimulated dog, and what can you do to help it?
A bored dog looks more like a bad dog. An anxious dog looks more like a reactive dog. I personally have never met a truly aggressive dog. I've worked with a lot of reactive dogs. A truly aggressive dog is a dog who was born not anxious, but who was born with something wrong and wants to hurt people. All the reactive dogs I have worked with, and again, that's a lot, have been anxious or scared or whatever it may be. There's something going on and therefore react in a way that is protective or aggressive. They are not truly aggressive though. They just react in an aggressive way. So I don't like using that word because it is very rare in dogs, but that is how they are seen. So when it's anxiety, it tends to be more the classic signs of anxiety that are excessive drooling, reactivity, cowering away, hiding from certain stimuli, stuff like that. When it's under stimulation, again, it looks more like my dog's bad and it chews on stuff, but it's super friendly and loves people and is overly energetic and all this stuff. Sometimes they go hand in hand, but a lot of times, like sometimes you'll have an anxious dog that's also understimulated and it's not helping anybody. But when your dog is understimulated, it's really just going to be those few behaviors. It's not going to be their overall personality, like when it's not even personality, but overall behavior when it's anxiety. A bored dog is usually a dog that is destructive, like I said, but not in a way that's repetitive, if that makes any sense. An anxious dog is going to look for structure. So they are going to chew the same thing and they are going to chew it until they're bloody and they are going to keep at it. A bored dog might chew up everything in your house, but they're not going to do it to the point where they're hurting themselves most of the time. You know, if they're barking excessively, it's not directed at something. It's just kind of barking, their hackles don't come up when they do bark. Again, it's assessing how my dog reacts, why they're reacting, and what they're reacting to. Because it might just be they saw a bird fly by, and so that's what triggered it. But they're not anxious because the bird flew by. It was just something that happened, so now they're going to bark. But then they don't stop when the bird's gone. They run to the other window and bark at nothing and all this stuff. I want to say it's easy to tell the difference between, because I read dogs for fun and I get paid to read dogs and it's just what I love doing. But it might not be that easy for people who aren't skilled in the matter, but there are ways to tell differences, and it tends to be easier than people think. Even if it's not easy, it's easier than just saying, oh, my dog barks. And barking is a symptom for both these things, so there's no way to tell it apart.
One thing that I always look for, kind of like what you were saying, is it a pattern or is it just random? The way I envision it is, did the dog tear up your couch and is there stuffing everywhere? Or did the dog, like, start eating through the door? Is the dog barking every time that somebody walks in your front yard and they see them out the window? Or are they barking randomly, seemingly for no reason?
Right. Yeah. No, that's what it tends to be. And again, sometimes there is overlap and there's never a one thing fits all, or this is always true when it comes to animals or any behavior. But that is what it tends to be. If it seems to be more willy-nilly, no really said reason, usually it's because of understimulation. Your dog's bored and it's looking for something to do.
I found too in my time with Millie and Svedka and other dogs that if it's anxiety related, even if you don't relate to the attempt to get rid of something or you don't agree that it is something worth being anxious over, you can tell what they're upset about. Like if I take Millie on a walk, she is not as good for me as she is for you. And every dog she sees, she will just try to get to every dog she sees, and she'll pull on the leash and try and get to them. So when I see that, I say, okay, Millie's a little bit anxious that other dogs are around us. She doesn't like that. That's anxiety. Versus if I take her on a walk and she hasn't done anything all day and she just pulls the entire time, she was bored.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot to unpack there that I'm not going to, because that's not what we're on today. Differences in handlers and all that stuff. Maybe we'll do an episode on that one day. But you have to stop me, because I will just go on about dogs all the time, no matter what. I have certain friends that I tell aren't allowed to tell me about their dogs, because I will psychoanalyze them and then they'll never talk to me again. So if you know the dog, it is easier to tell when they are anxious and when they're understimulated. Because there is a difference, and if you know them, you can assess that.
Say that you've got this dog and it can't seem to learn how to stop going to the bathroom inside. It's not an anxious dog. You've examined every possible way that that could be manifesting. It's not understimulated. You take it to the dog park for 3 hours every single day. It's gotten plenty of exercise. You give it enrichment toys and everything. What else could it be?
I mean, off the bat, I'm going to say health issue. Usually when it's a potty trained dog that is peeing in the house, it's a health issue. My grandparents have a dog. His brain's too big for his head, literally. He's not very smart, but his brain doesn't fit in his skull. So he isn't able to learn certain things. And one of those things is how to be potty trained. So he has to wear a diaper. A lot of times if it's stuff like that, it's going to be a health issue. It could also be, I guess you said it's not anxiety, so it's not going to be that. Overexcitement, especially if they're younger, it could be that.
You would say generally that if you know it's not anxiety and you're sure about that, and you know they're not understimulated because you've made sure that you've done all the things and you've tried everything, the next step would be that you would guess it was a health issue.
I would always, again, I stated this earlier, I would always lead with, let me assess if it is a health issue. Because even right. though I'm assuming it's not, I want to address that very first, because what if the dog has something that within 2 days it's not gonna be able to live, but if you address it now, it'll be able to live a happy life and it just needs antibiotics twice a day. But yes, in that this situation, I would assume it's a health issue.
If you were to deal with any of these things, of course, seek any sort of health advice first. Not just look it up on DogWebMD, because everybody knows how that goes, but actually talk to a veterinarian. Even on the phone, a lot of vets will allow you to at least ask, like, hey, these are the dog's symptoms. Do I need to bring them in?
Millie very recently was throwing up almost every night. Not every night, but regularly at night. And I was freaking out because I was like, I can't work with sick dog. That's so unethical. So I didn't have my service dog. I didn't know what was wrong. We were feeding her the normal amounts. You know, I was putting her on a sick diet because I thought her tummy was upset. We called the vet, set up an appointment, and said, this is what's going on. Do we need to bring her in now? Like, do we need to take her to the emergency vet? Or can we wait to set up an appointment with our vet? And right then and there, the vet tech told us, this is what it is. This is what you need to do. And since we've done that, she's been fine. And so, like, it doesn't always have to be an appointment that you pay for or whatever. Just calling someone and talking to someone with that training can help so much.
I have not met a vet who does not love animals. So they're there to help you and your animal. So they will do the best they can over the phone. There are some things that they can't treat over the phone, but if you come to them with symptoms, they can probably give you a list of, it could be any of these three things, and you can work from there. Going back to those behaviors that we talked about at the beginning, just in case someone isn't sure, you know, we said if it's an anxious behavior, this is something that you can do to help. If it's an understimulation behavior, this is something you can do. Can you give us one super easy, super straightforward, if I see this behavior, I will do this thing, other than obviously calling a vet professional? If your dog was chewing all the time, what would you do? We can do, I know chewing goes for both. So if it's seemingly random chewing, what would be the first step you would take other than seeking medical help?
If your dog is chewing and you're not able to assess if it's anxiety or under stimulation, the first thing I would do is analyze when the dog's performing that behavior to see if you can assess if it's under stimulation or anxiety. Because you're not going to be able to address the problem if you don't know what the underlying issue is. If you're not able to do that and you're working with this dog and it's not going well for you, contact a professional. Most all professionals will do free evaluations. So they will evaluate your dog. They will talk to you. They might not give you all the training tips, but they'll say, this is what, as a professional, I believe is going on. And that can help so much. Even if you don't continue going to them. I do free evaluations and I never care if someone doesn't call me back. Yes, I prefer when they do, because that's when I actually get paid and I love working with animals, so I get to keep working with them. But if someone doesn't call me back, most of the time that means they were able to address it. And that makes me so happy, because the dog is getting the help they need and the owner is willing to do the work. The owner just didn't know how to start, and I provided them with that little kickstart, and that was all they needed. But if you are able to see when the behavior is happening, what's triggering it, you know, all of these things, and you're able to assess if it's anxiety or under stimulation, anxiety, I'm not going to be able to give you one thing to do. Anxiety is so deep and it's so vast and broad, and it's different in every dog, every person, every animal. There's not a one thing that's going to fix it. What might help one dog might deter another dog and make it even worse. But if it's bad enough to the point where the dog can't really function and you can't handle it, you really need to seek professional advice. If it's not quite that bad, there are a bunch of forums, there are a bunch of people, and if there's a dog that is very similar to yours, someone might have advice for you of how it helps them. And so just kind of troubleshoot with it. Be willing to find people who are going to say, this is what helped my dog. And be willing to not experiment, because they're not They're beings with personalities and a conscience, so you shouldn't be experimenting with them, but be willing to troubleshoot and say, this is what my dog's doing. This is what I've realized is why they're doing it. This person has a very, very similar situation with a similar dog, similar breed. This is what helps them. So I'm going to make the educated assumption that it's going to help my dog as well and be willing to commit to that, but not to the point where you're going to do it no matter what. If it's not helping your dog, find something else. You have to dedicate time to it. It's not going to fix your dog in a month, two. It might not even fix it in 6 months. But if you aren't seeing any progression or you're only seeing regression, then find something else. Find a different method. You are training the dog in front of you. You are not training every dog. Every dog is different. If it's an understimulated dog, it tends to be a lot easier. I'm a calm, give it to them every time you leave the house. If it's to the point where they're going to need a job, sometimes you're going to have to find something like agility that you can do with them, or it can be something stupid like you teach them to bring you your blanket when you're sitting on the couch. And that's so much fun because you're being lazy. You don't have to get your blanket anymore when you're watching TV. And the dog has that fulfillment of knowing, oh, I have a job every time I do this. So retrieval tasks, things like that, if it's more intense. But it also can be as simple as buying them a Kong, giving them something to chew on that isn't furniture, things like that. So there are a million enrichment toys nowadays. Snuffle mats. Snuffle mats are amazing. Dogs who do have chewing problems sometimes chew them up, but not always.
And you can make those at home.
I've made not many, but I've made a lot of snuffle mats. They're fun to make. They're not actually. They're very torturous to make. But you can make them.
You can also buy them for not very expensive online. So I would assume that your answer for anxiety goes with most of these items, that it's going to be more complicated than just buy a snuffle mat. But I know with Svedka, the peanut butter Kong works wonders.
I will say separation anxiety is going to be a little bit different because you're leaving them and you're trying to distract them. Not necessarily distract them, but teach them, I am coming home, you are safe, focus on something else, do something else. And it's kind of like what I was saying earlier, when your dog is anxious, it's usually because they don't know what they're supposed to do. I have an anxious dog. When I'm working with an anxious dog and I have a situation that they're anxious in, the first thing I do is tell them what's expected of them. Tell them how they should behave, because a lot of times they don't know. We get mad and we say, no, don't do this, but we never tell them what they should be doing. That's easy when your dog's on your leash and they're anxious right with you and you're always there and you're able to say, okay, you're supposed to be sitting, and you're correcting that behavior and you're telling them to sit or lay down or stay or whatever it is. But when you leave, you can't have that verbal affirmation for them. So it has to be something like a Kong, a snuffle mat, things like that. You're supposed to be being calm, or you're supposed to be staying in your crate, or this or that. Good for doing that. Here's your Kong. Or you're supposed to be chewing on this instead of the furniture. Good for doing that. Here's what you're supposed to be chewing on. Things like that. So it is going to be a little different for separation anxiety. And anxiety can stem from being understimulated. So sometimes that does help, although usually very, very, very rarely does it ever like fix the problem. But I know Millie, she doesn't really get anxious because she's understimulated, but she will show anxious traits sometimes, or it helps her anxiety if I keep her stimulated.
It's like a distraction.
Yeah.
Svedka loves a good distraction when I'm gone. For her, I put on music and I leave her a Kong and things like that. It just gives her something else to focus on until I get back.
Yeah.
And it makes the time seem less intimidating when she knows I'm going to leave. So I would assume that most of those things, like I said, kind of go along the same answer of you don't really know until you assess the dog for anxiety. But for understimulation, it can be a little bit more simple. If things like barking or mouthiness or any of those other things that we talked about just for understimulation are occurring, would you still recommend those same things, those brain games, essentially, like the snuffle mat or other toys like that?
Yeah.
Or I know Millie likes a long walk outside where she gets to actually smell everything.
Decompression walks help a lot. Millie gets a lot of stimulation on good days. Some days I am not able to work her as much as I like to. People think that a structured walk is the only way to get a dog a stimulated walk. Allowing them to smell things and get all the good smells in is so stimulating for dogs as well. So that can help a lot. Again, there's not one thing that's just going to fix whatever's going on. But if your dog is understimulated, giving them stimulation is going to help no matter what it is. You might have to also train out a behavior that they've learned because they were understimulated, or pair it with something. But if your dog's understimulated, I don't see how giving them stimulation could ever be a bad thing, unless you boost it to the point where they're overstimulated. But just providing them with a calm when you're gone, or a snuffle mat, or again, taking them on decompression walks every once in a while isn't going to hurt, because you're providing them the stimulation that they're lacking.
Like you mentioned before, a free evaluation can answer for you with almost certainty if you can, like, really note the behaviors and describe them to someone who's a professional what type of issue you're dealing with. So it's definitely worth your time. And hopefully our suggestions can kind of get you from today until you can actually have that appointment, because it might be a little while. It can never hurt to give them something to do. Something that, if it's anxiety, it'll help take their mind off of it, distract them a little bit. And if it's under stimulation, that's what they needed anyway.
I will say, never lie to your trainer and never pretend like a behavior happens only once. We've seen it all. I have seen dogs be terrible. I have seen dogs be little angels. So don't think because your dog jumps on me when I walk in the door, I'm going to hate you or think it's terrible. Let them be bad. I want to see what happens. I want to see what you're referring to. And I don't want you to pretend like, oh, this happens only every once in a while. I want to hear every detail, because that's how I can help you. I'm not judging you. Trainers aren't there to shame you for what you did wrong or for something that you screwed up. We're there because we love dogs and we love animals and we want to help them. And we can't do that if we're not being told the whole story. Now, if we are allowed to assess them, a lot of times we can help even if we aren't giving everything. But it helps so much more if I'm able to see, okay, this is what happens when this happens. This is how they react. And you're saying it happens every single time. If you say, oh, it happens sometimes, I don't know if I can believe that or not. And so it's just, be honest, because it is helping you and the dog. And the whole situation, we're not here to judge you. We're not here to shame you. We're here to help you.
I will say two specific things about trainers. One is, you would much rather be embarrassed in front of your trainer who's used to seeing dogs. I guarantee you, whatever you have, whatever is, like, quote unquote, wrong with your dog, not that anything's actually wrong with them, but whatever behavior you don't like that they're doing, the trainer has seen worse. I guarantee you they've seen worse. A lot of these trainers actually will go to rescues or shelters or pounds or wherever when they're getting a dog, and they will try to find the worst dog there as far as behaviors so that they can save them. So they have seen worse probably from their own dog.
I have not lost interest. I love all dogs, all breeds. I don't think they're all cute, and sometimes I get annoyed, but I love them all very, very, very much. But I have lost interest in owning dogs like labs and English setters and dogs that are easy, because I want the Belgian Malinois and the blue heelers and the cattle dogs, because they're a pain. They're, like, troublesome. They're got all this stuff. And I will always rescue. I will never go through breeders. Not that that's always wrong, but because that's what I want. But I want to go find that dog that's supposedly terrible and awful, because that's what we want. Like, we want those dogs that need help.
So that's one thing. You do not worry about being embarrassed in front of your trainer. If they haven't seen worse, they will very soon. And regardless, they know there's worse out there.
Yes.
There is no trainer that has not learned about just how absolutely crazy dogs can be under the right circumstances. They also have some very valuable knowledge even in just watching how they are around your dog. So like every time that Svedka comes to see Zoe, it is a learning experience for me because I get to see what Zoe does around Svedka. Because like I just kind of exist around my dog. But anytime that Zoe is with a dog, she has a different mindset around being around dogs. And I can learn something. Every time that Zoe comes home, Svedka jumps on her because she jumps on people when they come through the door. We're working on it, but she gets much better when I learn how Zoe works on it than she does when I just try and do it myself based on what I think would work. So watch your trainer and how they interact with your dog too. Don't just sit there or go in the other room unless they ask you to.
Right.
But don't like just kind of zone out and not pay attention because you'll learn valuable stuff just from watching them.
Most of the time when we do an eval, we care about what you say about the dog, but we're not as interested in getting to know you, getting to know the situation. We care about assessing the dog. So a lot of times we are just going to be interacting with that dog, and that gives you a huge opportunity to see how we do that and how we address certain things. Like you said with jumping, if you think this is helping, but then I walk in the door, the dog jumps on me, I do one thing, and he stops. Maybe you should try that too. It's not going to be as effective because your dog loved you a lot more and probably gets away with it more with you than anyone else. Because I know Millie, the only people Millie jumps on are my grandmother, my dad, and me. And that's because we love her the most out of everyone. And she loves us the most out of everyone. So we let it slide maybe once or twice. And she knows that. So she takes her chances almost every single time.
Nana always lets it slide. But she never gets away with it when she does it to Nana because somebody else won't let her do it to Nana.
But
Nana always gives her exactly what she wants.
Yes, exactly. And she'll be like, no, Millie, we talked about this. And then pets her ears. I'm like, Nana, what are you doing? My point is, we are going to be... It might even seem rude, and I try really hard to show respect to the owner, but I usually only have a 30 minutes to an hour to meet this dog and assess all of these years of problems or issues that you want me to help you with. So I am going to spend that time interacting with the dog, and that isn't only supposed to be beneficial to me. That's supposed to help you too and see how I do this, how I do that. And I try to walk people through it, and most trainers do. But it is hard sometimes to fit everything in, especially when it's things sometimes that we don't realize aren't simple. I try to take it back to level one, not because I think people are stupid. I think most of my clients are very knowledgeable and have tried things. But I try to back up because I'll go 90 miles an hour and just blurt out everything and forget that I have studied all of this. And I don't need any background information, but this person might need a little bit more because they aren't going into the profession or in the profession. So they don't have all of the background knowledge that I do.
Absolutely. They didn't get into that job because they wanted to make a ton of money. So you can be upfront with them about, you know, I can only afford this type of treatment. I only have the time for this certain type of thing. And they will help you to the best that is possible find things that will fit your budget or your time restrictions or whatever else it may be.
One of my favorite clients ever, I only ever did an evaluation with her, so she never paid me any money. Her dog, one of my favorite dogs that I've ever worked with, not my favorite because I've worked with lots of dogs, so I don't really know if I have a favorite, but Shavap is one of my favorite dogs I've ever worked with. Also, super fun name. Let's just mention that real quick. But I love her because she cared so much. She was so caring about how she could help Shabbat. And still, to this day, I see her every once in a while. I'll just run into her and she'll tell me all about it and all that's going on. And she'll text me and say, oh, Shabbat did this today, or this is getting so much better, or we're having a rough day, but like, I thought about what you said when we were talking once, and it really helped. And that just, like, that's so sweet to me because she obviously cares and I obviously helped her. And most trainers aren't going to be offended if you only use our evaluation. Like, please abuse that. Please, because we want to help dogs. And yes, it's nice when I get to work with them more because I love getting to know them. I love getting to know my clients. I'm not gonna lie, I like getting the money. But we want to help the dog. We're not there to scam you or to take your money or whatever. Allow your dog to embarrass you. That's what we want to see.
Zoe wouldn't take so many free eval appointments from all of my friends here in a different city if she was in it for the money. We're all in college. None of us have money. How would you recommend people who need to find a good trainer look for one in their area?
This is very difficult because there are no regulations in dog training, which for me right now is a senior in high school who hasn't been able to get any certifications on dog training, but have put a lot of work into it, so feel very comfortable and am eligible to train dogs. It's amazing because I don't have to go get some certificate. But it's terrible because it's hard to say this is a reputable trainer because they have this. That's not always going to be the case. But all good trainers that I've met and I've spoken to, websites I've gone to, they will put reviews or references on their website and they will say, contact them. They will give them an email or say, contact me and I will get you in touch with them. And do that. Don't just say, oh, this person has this on there, so they're reputable. Contact the person. Talk to them. Contact as many as you can or as many as you're comfortable with and see how they helped their dog, what their dog went in for, and if it's right for your dog. Because even if it's a reputable trainer and if all this stuff is right, if you are trying to train your dog for reactivity and this is a place that trains advanced obedience, that might help, but they don't specialize in reactivity. And if you talk to those people and they tell you that, then that's helpful and go find someone else. So use references, take them, contact them. That's really the biggest thing. Make sure you see what type of dog training you want. Some people want force-free. Some people want positive only. Some people want open dog training, balanced dog training. There are a million different types. I personally am an open dog trainer. I am not an abusive dog trainer, and I am not neglectful. I do not do some tactics that, like dominance, that have been debunked. But I will correct my dog. I'm not afraid to tell them no. There are some tools that I would not just give to a client, but because I have been trained to use them, I will use them. And not in a assertive way, but in a way that allows me to handle a dog, especially if they're much larger and stronger than I am. But not everyone's comfortable with that. Personally, as a trainer, I'm willing to see that. And I will say, if you aren't comfortable with that, I am able to train a dog without using those certain things. So I will train how you want me to train your dog, but don't take your dog to a place that you're not going to be feel comfortable with. Because at the end of the day, if you only want positive training, you're just going to be uncomfortable and sad when you take them somewhere else. So find a reputable place that's training aligns with your ethics and viewpoints on dog training.
An evaluation at most training locations will be free. So if you go somewhere and you think it's going to be great and then it seems like it didn't help, don't get discouraged. Try something else or someone else, maybe even in the same area. Maybe your dog just didn't respond to that type of approach as well as you were hoping it would. I know a lot of people who have tried one type of training and either their dog didn't respond to it as well or it wasn't a long enough time that they got to train or the owner didn't really get it the first time when they did a free evaluation. So try a couple different things if you need to. Don't give up just because it doesn't work the first time and be discouraged. Your dog is not broken.
I will also say if a trainer is a one method trainer or a facility is a one method facility, which means they always do this with a dog. So say they preach about e-collars and every dog that goes in gets an e-collar, or they always put your dog in a prong and they say it fixes all. Most likely they're not going to be super reputable. Sometimes they are and sometimes they surprise me. But again, your dog is different than your neighbor's dog and the other dog. You're training the dog in front of you, not every dog in the world. There's not one thing that helps every dog. So First, allow yourself to acknowledge that. Allow yourself to say, okay, this might work for them, but it might not work for me, and that's okay. But also, make sure your trainer is willing to acknowledge that, because it is important.
All right, well, that's all that we've got for you today. We hope this was helpful, and we hope you enjoyed it. Let us know.
Just always remember that you are your dog's voice, so be willing to advocate for them, and don't be ashamed if they're not like the puppy golden retriever that you see on TV. Sometimes they don't like other dogs, or they don't want to be in all situations, and that's okay. Just make sure you speak up for them.